Welcome to the Model Railroader, your ultimate destination for all things railroading. From trains.com, we bring you step-by-step modeling and construction projects, insightful reviews, tips from the experts, and more. This program is proudly presented by the Audio Information Network of Colorado, dedicated to providing accessible content for all. Find us at aincolorado.org. This program is intended to be used solely by individuals with barriers to print. All aboard!
Thank you for joining us for the September 2023 reading of the Model Railroader magazine, September 2023. My name is Raymond Wallander. Today I'll be reading articles such as The Clash of Eras as a Millennial Builds an 1830s Layout and Chris Moore's Cascade and Twin Mountain Models Colorado in H.O. Gage, and we'll also have a model railroader without a layout. So we've got some of those articles and more, and I hope you enjoy our time together. When a friend of his wanted a weed sprayer to run in a maintenance-of-way train on his layout, modeler Jim Providenza helped him out by building this car, starting with pieces of an old roundhouse HO-scale caboose kit. This is a fun project that can be completed in a couple of evenings. It's entitled Build an HOA-scale Weed Sprayer for Fun. Kit Bash, a maintenance-of-way car from items laying around your workshop. Building a weed sprayer car was not just enjoyable, it was downright fun. It all started when my friend Paul Weiss declared that he was going to run a weed sprayer maintenance-of-the-way, MOW, train at an upcoming operating session on his Central Vermont Railway. 5 days before the session, Paul handed me two Bachmann boxes. Inside were tank cars with factory track cleaning pads attached. The tanks were labeled weed sprayer service only. Paul asked me to run them through a standard check, and I agreed. I'm a freight car guy. I asked him where was the weed sprayer car that should accompany the tank cars. Paul, to his credit, just looked at me deadpan. I was on my own. That was okay, because I quickly got an idea for building one. It would likely be an old house car with operator's windows across the front, a horizontal pipe with nozzles for spraying herbicide along the bottom of the end, and booms tucked in along the sides that could be swung out over the right-of-way. Starting the build later that evening, after scrounging my home hobby shelves, I located my quarry, a very old truss rod slide door caboose from Roundhouse, a relic of the early days of my HO scale Santa Cruz Northern. It was retired years ago for newer caboose that better fit my early 1970s railroad. Its cupola was missing, and I had salvaged its Fox trucks for another project. At least it still had its Katy No. 5 couplers. It was just the sort of cast-off that my SCN shops might repurpose for MOW work. After more scrounging, I located a pair of plastic arch bar trucks painted boxcar red with Cadee wheel sets already installed. Cadee wheels are standard on Paul's CV layout. I attached them to the car and put it on my test track. Luckily, the couplers were still at the correct height. Next, I discovered that three Titchy trained group work car windows, number 8068, could span the end of the car body opposite the hole in the roof from the missing cupola. I drew out lines on the model, then drilled a 3/16 inch pilot hole inside them, followed up by a 1/4 inch hole. A bit of work with a number 11 blade enlarged this hole enough to insert a circuit board enabler, MicroMark part number 81477. Nibblers are excellent tools for making holes for doors and windows in plastic, and they make good square corners. I nibbled away the plastic, checking my progress with the window as I went. I used Flex-Eye File, styrene glue, to cement the titchy windows in place. I spaced them apart with lengths of Evergreen Scale Models HO Scale 4x12 styrene strip. That's number 8212. I liberated the steps from the pair of Tichy work car doors, number 8231, and glued them to the car body below the side doors in the place of the missing steps. I reasoned the shop forces would put a small diesel engine powering a pump, compressor, and electric generator in the back half of the former caboose. It made sense, and I was a quick and dirty solution, that they would install a metal roof above the new equipment space, which was the hole left by the missing cupola. I cut a rectangle of Evergreen corrugated siding number 4527 to fit and glued it in place. I added a length of Evergreen 1/3 inch tube to number 223 as an exhaust stack. I completed work on the roof by relocating the corner platforms to match the side ladders' locations. While the glue dried, I went looking for suitable piping and nozzles. I figured that plastic sprue of the right size would work. Looking through my detail parts, I found a set of freight car ladders attached to sprues that looked right. The sprues scaled out to 3 inches in diameter. Clipping the ladders off with a spruce cutter left a pipe I could trim to pan the width of the car. I made sure the nubs representing nozzles lined up in the right places. The second ladder sprue became the side booms. They are a little shorter than I would have liked, but such was the nature of this project. I realized Tichy 18-inch grab irons, number 305, to replace ones that had gone missing. I added a Cal Scale power brake wheel assembly, number 190-351, to the B end of the car in place of the missing vertical brake staff and wheel. I painted the new windows, brake gear, and grab irons with some boxcar red acrylic paint. The new roof panel and the sprayer piping got a coat of silver. I then painted the exhaust stack grimy black and, diluting some, used it to weather the new roof section and the window frames. The weed sprayer piping and areas of Paul's pair of Bachmann track cleaning tank cars received Citadel Miniatures fluorescent green wash, which added an appropriately nasty chemical look to them. The weed sprayer and tank cars went into service in time for Paul's operating session, but the model clearly needed a few more details. Adding the details back in the shops, the following week I added a Detail Associates dual headlight, number LT1009, with MV product line lenses, numbers LS19, A-line windshield wipers, numbers 29201, and 3 Tichy roof corner grab irons, number 3028. I built up a brake platform from Evergreen 2x12 styrene strip and added it below the power brake. Lastly, I applied some Archer resin decal louvers, number 88038, onto a piece of 0.010-inch Evergreen styrene measuring 2.5x3 scale feet. I edged the styrene with a 1x2 Evergreen styrene strip and glued the resulting vent to the rear of the right side of the car. After painting the new parts, the speed sprayer is ready for more work. Paul and I plan to share the MOW weed spray train for operating sessions on his Central Vermont and my Santa Cruz Northern layouts. This project was just plain fun. Now, those Bachmann tank cars, they could use some tweaking, but that's a project for another day. Well, childhood rail fanning inspired this freelanced 1950s Northeastern Industrial Railroad, as Jim Lady recalls pleasant memories of youth. Like many hobbyists, I became hooked on trains as a child. I grew up within bicycle distance of the four-track New York, New Haven, and Hartford's electrified mainland, where I watched long passenger trains speed past and heavy freight trains make their way toward a distant place called Maybrook Gateway. If I was very lucky, I got a chance to catch the normally nocturnal New Haven local freight switching cars during daylight hours right down the street from my house. I watched it switch cars at the Frito corn chip plant, the local lumber yard, and a freight house bustling with Railway Express Agency trucks being loaded and unloaded. All this nurtured an interest in trains and model railroads that last to this day. My interests were further expanded by my many trips to the New York Central's Harmon, New York depot to drop off or pick up my older brother, who traveled to and from college in Troy, New York. Later, we moved to northeastern Pennsylvania, which had a variety of railroads. I spent many years watching trains and operating in this area. I also discovered the diminutive Middletown and New Jersey Short Line, and I couldn't help but shake my head and smile when viewing its grass-covered right-of-way. Today, my interests include many northeastern railroads. Modeling the Maybrook Gateway, as I get older, I grew excited about building a prototype layout based on the Maybrook, New York area. It was a terminal for lots of interesting railroads and a very busy place. But as I did research on this concept, it dawned on me that I would be leaving out many of the railroads that I loved, such as the NYC, Erie, and Delaware and Hudson. Maybrook also didn't satisfy my wishes for heavy switching transfer and local freight operations. Bigger industries, passenger and head-end transfer traffic, port and freight car float interchange, short line connecting railroads, anthracite, coal mining, and multiple junctions and interchanges. It became obvious to me that a prototype freelanced Maybrook layout was my best option. Approximately 30 years ago, I learned computer-aided drawing, CAD, and used it as a tool in my construction company to create more appealing houses and remodeling jobs. These skills proved invaluable in designing and constructing my layout by helping me visualize my ideas and overcome the challenges of my layout space. Using the proto-freelance premise allowed me to include nearly all of the features that I wanted in my layout without sacrificing any of my interest. Northeast heavy industrial railroading in the mid-1950s was my goal, and I'm pleased to have achieved a pretty good representation of this in my rather small layout footprint. The CNY and NE is born. Because of the many changes that I made to the Maybrook area, I decided to name the main town Maywood, a town named for a small H.O. railroad that I had as a child. I designed the Central New York and New England Railroad as a fictitious bridge line jointly operated by the NYC, Erie, and D&H. Several short lines also operated in the region, attracted by the many of the same reasons. It runs from a large yard in Paterson, New Jersey, to Oneonto, or I didn't say it right, and Utica, New York. It also offered its owners access to the Maywood New England Gateway and to the many industries and resources in the area, including plentiful anthracite coal. The Maywood terminal car float operation in Port Hendrick offered a competitive alternative to the New Haven's Poughkeepsie Bridge route connected to the Central New England across the Hudson River for direct access to Hartford, Connecticut, and other New England cities. In reality, the Erie operated a significant cross-Hudson river for direct access to Hartford, Connecticut, and other New England cities. But it was a significant cross-Hudson car float operation using its Newburgh branch until the Poughkeepsie Bridge was completed in the early 1900s. In North Fork, on the upper deck, an Erie D&H line to Carbondale, Scranton, and Wilkes-Barre, known as the East Jefferson Branch, offers additional connections to the west and south. The Lay and Hudson River ran into Maywood, and the Jersey Central also had trackage rights using this line to run a daily Maywood to Allentown Yard round trip through freight. Designing a multi-deck railroad, although my finished cellar has a walkout design and a large family room, I wanted to keep my layout confined to an approximately 11 by 19 foot room and an adjacent 7 by 9 foot space in my workshop for a helix and staging area. I didn't want a huge design that was hard to build and maintain. Fitting the railroad into a condensed footprint while maximizing my operational interest required that I use a multi-deck design. Tony Coaster's book, Designing and Building Multi-Deck Model Railroads, quickly became my Bible and blueprint for the layout design. The advantages and pitfalls of multi-deck layouts are discussed thoroughly in this book, and without it, my layout would not be as good as it is today. Deciding on deck heights, depths, necessary lighting to avoid darkness, between decks, construction details, staging options, and much more are outlined there. It is an absolute must for anyone considering a multi-deck layout design. The helix is constructed entirely of 3/4 inch birch plywood, a biscuit cutter, and plenty of tight bond carpenter's glue was used to make strong joints. This type of construction eliminated any splice plates on the helix, which would have diminished the tight clearance needed between each rise. The 6-foot diameter helix has a 4-inch rise per turn, so the approximate grade is 1.5% throughout. The helix performs two functions. It connects the two main decks, forming a continuous portion of the CNY and NE main line westward from East Cabin and Crawford Yard on the lower deck to Jefferson and West Carbon staging on the upper deck. It also contains staging for about 15 trains on the east and west ends of the railroad. I tried radial or serial staging on the helix itself, but quickly realized that it was too difficult to operate if I couldn't see the trains. So I constructed a 7-track East Cabin staging area from the bottom of the helix, which extends into the layout room as its bottom third deck. The dispatcher is located in the helix area and also serves as a staging mole to handle trains as they leave and enter staging. There's also a staging for about 6 trains on hidden staging tracks in the train room itself. In all, there's staging available for about 21 trains, and if you add the switching jobs made up in the yards, we have the capacity to run a significant number of trains in an operating session. Construction and control was conventional 1x4 pine benchwork supports the lower deck. Heavy metal wall brackets hold the upper deck. The lowest staging deck is suspended from wood brackets about 7 inches below the main deck. All decks have 1/4 inch cabinet-grade birch plywood and 1/2 inch homosote glued and screwed down. Expansion and contraction has been minimal. I use NCE's digital command control system with 10 radio throttles. The layout is divided into power districts using multiple PSX breakers. I have used a variety of DCC-friendly commercial turnouts along a few hand-laid ones. I line the turnouts using Caboose Industries N-scale grade throws. Tam Valley frog juicer circuits power the frogs. Crew members can closely follow their trains around the layout, lining switches as needed, just as on the prototype. Operations: during an operating session, several through freights and a couple of passenger trains run east and west on the main line. The freights stop in the two main yards to interchange cars, and the passenger trains stop at Maywood and Norfolk stations for passenger and head-end business. The dispatcher uses timetable and train order, TTTO, rules. He issues clearance form as and train orders to protect train mainline trains. Much of the layout is operated by yard limit rules. However, with towers or manned cabins controlling the junctions and interlockings with working signals, the layout has two major and several smaller yards to provide car classification and storage for the local freights, which service about 60 industries and interchanges. Visitors get the impression that the railroad is much bigger than it really is because of several large industries: Bradford Lime Works, two General Electric plants, a large combination and powered carbon mine, Horton Chemical and North Fork Glassworks are fictitious but credible industries providing lots of switching opportunities. Instead of using the typical four-cycle car card and waybill system, I've developed a spreadsheet-based switch that list concept that prints switch list for yard and train operations. This avoids the many card boxes spread out around the layout, and the crews seem to like its simplicity. Future goals and projects include my HO scale CNY and NE is about 80% complete. I plan to finish the few remaining structures and details in the very near future. I've been working on a plan to expand the model railroad into the family room on a narrow shelf along one 17-foot wall. The conceptual plan has two decks that have track connections through the wall into the main layout room. The 1-foot, 5-inch, and 17-foot, 0-inch upper deck will be a fictitious D&H branch line with some rural industries and switching. The 19-inch, excuse me, by 17-foot lower deck will be the heavily industrialized Seymour branch of the CNY and NE. This will allow me to continue the layout design and construction process that I love so much. Overall, I'm pleased with my modeling efforts with the Central New York and New England. I'm glad that I changed to the proto-freelance and multi-deck concepts, which have allowed me to use my creativity to include much of the operational interest that I've developed over the years. And if you'd like to meet Jim Lady, Jim Lady lives in Milford in Northeast Pennsylvania with his wife, Susan. Jim is a semi-retired owner of a home building and remodeling company. He has been interested in trains and model railroads for the past 57 years. Jim and his family spend summers on a lake enjoying swimming, fishing, and kayaking. That will do it for today's reading. And to clarify one issue, just to let you know, these articles were taken instead of from the September issue, they were taken from the more recent October issue, and we hope you thoroughly enjoy all that they have to offer, and there are many more articles to come as we go through the October issue and beyond. So thank you for joining us for the Model Railroading October issue, and my name is Raymond Wallander.
You've been listening to The Model Railroader, brought to you by Trains.com, that's TRANES.com, in collaboration with the Audio Information Network of Colorado. If you enjoyed this episode, we invite you to visit our website at aincolorado.org, where you can find more audio editions and original podcasts. For additional inquiries or to connect with us, feel free to give us a call at 303-786-7777. Thank you for listening.